Chiland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the Calcioland Podcast of the week and the first one post the transfer window. So today we are going to take a deep dive in the transfer window in Serie A. At the top, Alex and I will elect the best move in Serie A of this window. I'll name my winners and losers of the transfer window, and then we'll go a little more nitty-gritty, look at some mid-table teams, some good fits on various clubs. We, of course, have a part of the podcast just for our patrons and available to all. We have a very fun and informative interview on Roma with our friend Steve Cerruti. I really appreciate him hopping on at the last second. It was really a great interview. I think you will really enjoy hearing about Roma. But before we get to all that, I am joined by your dear friend, producer, co-host of the show, Alex Goldberg. He's had a great transfer window. Feels like Chelsea were kind of in their own window. But Alex, I have to ask you, in Serie A, so we did have some, you know, some fairly big moves. I would say two really big ones and some other fairly big ones that I want to talk about. So I picked what I think were the four or five most significant moves in Serie A, and I want to ask you which one you think is the most impressive. We've had a little taste of almost all these players on these new teams. So these are the top ones that I can think of. And tell me which one is your favorite. So we've had Osimhen at Napoli, Hakimi at Inter. For Juve, you can pick either Arthur or Chiesa. And for Milan, we have Tonali. For Roma, you know, we could pick Smalling, but let's keep it to these teams. Out of these transfers, which one impressed you the most?
Yeah, I like this question a lot. So my disclaimer is that I have to just say how I like them right this moment. However, part of my disclaimer is saying I think the one that could go insanely high, where maybe someone laughs back at my answer, is Tonali at Milan. Because I just feel like, whether you want to draw Pirlo comparisons or not, it just feels like maybe that one becomes a legendary move if you rate the player enough. Maybe that is the situation where he also starts to turn that club around and it becomes a fairy tale story. So we could look back on this question and Tonali is the clear front runner. But he's not my but he's not my answer in this moment. My answer is not going to be either of those players to Juve, because rate both. I think I rate Arthur more than Chiesa, and they could both help, but I'm just not sure they will be the most impactful in this group. It's really hard, David, not to go with Hakimi to Inter. So he is my answer, but Osimhen gives him a good run for his money in my answer. But it just, I mean, you get not many more deals that make so much sense from every angle. Like Hakimi to Inter, you first just applaud Inter for being in play for a player like that who's trending up. He's at Borussia Dortmund, a team where it's the shopping market of the world, it seems, and their players are just so wanted by all the top clubs. So you get one of their prized assets in Hakimi. But I know, Real own him. But I'm just saying he's playing at Borussia Dortmund. Either way, Real Dortmund, you're getting him from a good team. So you get a player on the up like that, but the fit, the manner, I mean, this is a huge reason why I thought Conte would be bat shit crazy. Yeah, I'm swearing. I'll just use up my one swear. To let go of Hakimi, because that's your signing, Conte. Sure, he could go to any team, obviously, and be a good signing, but that is tailored for you. So that was really appalling to me that once Hakimi was in, Conte could still do something to jeopardize him leaving. He can spin it how he wants, but it just makes so much sense for the player, for the manager, for the team. It has the potential to be such a good move. And he might not be destined for Inter long term if they can get to the heights they want to. He could be, for sure. But yeah, I just think that transfer will be fantastic. Fantastic. And Osimhen to Napoli, you've talked about it, whether he's scoring or not, and I know he's not, he's still playing pretty well. And I mean, I really rate the player. I know I can't claim to be an expert on him because I didn't watch full-on Lille games, and that's true. But from what I've watched on him and from what I've heard on him of just how he kind of works and the way he views the game, he's a player that never quits. Like, I feel like he did pick a good team in Napoli. I feel like that's a good situation there for the club and the player again. So I think that's kind of the theme to my answers here, where the move makes sense for the club and the player. So they'll play him a lot, you theorize, and he'll get a lot of opportunities to impress. And I think he'll be a really good signing for Napoli. But with Hakimi, I'm almost positive he's going to be a fantastic signing for Inter. And once again, Tonali could, long-term, be the one that just is the legendary move of the group. So I guess I just ranked them for you. Hakimi, Osimhen. I just ranked them. Hakimi, Osimhen, Tonali, and then the Juve ones. But David, how would you rank them?
Well, great job, Alex. I think we're going to land pretty much in the same place. So, yeah, I think it's very important to look at immediate impact and more long-term and how we look at these deals historically. So you nailed that answer. A couple of things that stand out to me. For one, the Chiesa and Tonali transfers are pretty similar in the sense that both happens on these multi-year loan deals. I mean, they are purchases in disguise, but neither Juve nor Milan wanted to spend the money up front now. So they get them on these multi-year loan deals, and I would say for very good value. I mean, Juve is paying Chiesa $2 million this year, and then I think $10 million, and then $40 million. Milan got Tonali for $40 million total. They are paying more up front this season, but they had to defeat Inter in the race. So it's interesting they both arrive alone. And interestingly, they both join teams that have young players that are in a similar position. Tonali and Bennacer, somewhat similar at Milan, Chiesa and Kulusevski at Juve. So in a sense, that kind of gives me a little bit pause on the fits for both of them. Now, obviously, these teams, Milan's in the Europa, Juve in the Champions League, so they will rotate. But, you know, I have to wonder, and more on the Chiesa Kulusevski side, I got to wonder if this is going to hurt their development, because they really are pretty similar pacey wingers known for that on the same team. And you have the two regista types on Milan. But those, I think, long-term could be really, really great moves as well. And you nailed it. I think I prefer Arthur over Chiesa for Juve as well. But I can't put Arthur quite on the level of Osimhen and Hakimi. I think Osimhen has played really well. He has yet to score. I think Insigne, comparing him a little bit to Cavani, is very, very interesting for the way he attacks and opens up spaces for his teammates and gives them a point of reference in the box for their opponents. So I think he's a very interesting fit, and we'll get to Napoli. I'm very intrigued by their transfer window as a whole. But yeah, I think the answer is Hakimi. He's been sensational so far. Granted, it's a small sample size. We knew his speed, dribbling was going to be elite in Serie A, and so far it's shown that way. I think him and Lukaku could be an absolutely devastating partnership. He fits that formation perfectly for Inter. So yeah, I have Hakimi number one, Osimhen second, Tonali, and then Chiesa. But I'm with you, Tonali, especially because it'll be remembered historically that he was promised to go to Inter and Milan took him from under their noses. That's going to be a transfer that's really going to become legendary if Tonali becomes the player so many of us are expecting him to be. So speaking of expecting things, Alex, I know it was a superb window for Chelsea overall, but we had ended up seeing Bakayoko back in Serie A at Napoli, but there were some other players that we thought were going to maybe leave Chelsea to join the Serie A. So are you surprised? And is there a player in particular you're surprised and go back to Serie A from Chelsea?
Yeah, it's a good question, David, because it's all the talk right now in the Chelsea fan base, where I think everybody, even the trolls, are saying that Chelsea had a great window. I mean, come on, you can't say anything but that. They had a historic window in terms of who they brought in. However, it didn't end great because it's pretty clear that Frank Lampard wanted to whittle down the squad. it's really crowded right now. And just for clarity, because he wants to kind of go forth with an actual vision, a more cohesive project, he would have liked to clear out some players. And ideally, that's via sale. But we know, first of all, when you make bad deals in the past or you have average players on high weekly wages, sales become tough, but especially with this pandemic. So someone else, he was on my podcast, his name is Yannick, he put it really well. He said, well, maybe the pandemic didn't hurt Chelsea in incomings, but it hurt them with outgoings because it hurt the people, the teams that would want their players in terms of what they could spend. And Marina, as much as we love her, she's a prideful woman. So, yes, she wants to help Frank and whittle down the squad as well, but she also doesn't want to completely get rid of these players for a small percentage of what she paid. So, unfortunately, David, some of Chelsea's bad moves from the past haunted them in this moment, even though they were making plenty of good moves themselves currently. So, your bad business can haunt you, and especially was hard to escape because of the pandemic. So yes, am I shocked to an extent that Chelsea have three left backs still, not including Azpilicueta? Yeah. I mean, David, up until Saturday night, maybe even on Sunday, you had the most credible people out there, Fab, everybody saying, well, yeah, like they're still going to get rid of a left back. One of Emerson or Alonso is still going to end up somewhere. Everybody, my sources, like everybody. No one still really knew exactly where it would be, but that was the assumption the whole time, was somehow, some way, one of them is going. And Bakayoko, everything I've just said about how bad deals of the past or the pandemic hurt is case in point with Bakayoko. They were hoping that there would be some type of option or obligation to buy, and it ends up being alone. So that is the disappointing part for Chelsea. They couldn't outright sell players they wanted to sell. And right now they have five senior center backs, because Rudiger and Tomori stayed, and Christensen, yeah. Zuma and Silva, and three left backs, not including Azpilicueta. So fantastic window, but actually you don't have to be a Chelsea fan to realize that Chelsea's window was case in point of what you could do during this window, but also what you couldn't do. Great window, but couldn't get rid of players, crowded squad. And I think it kind of perfectly sums up what this window was all about. Maybe some of the big teams could still spend, but a lot of the smaller teams couldn't really take some of the big teams' players. Yeah. So yeah, that's my answer.
Absolutely. No, very well said, Alex. That's actually something Napoli Outsider and I were chatting off online about the market. It's exactly that. The teams with money, like Chelsea, the problem was is they didn't have a place to put their excess players. So very well said.
Yeah. All right. So, David, this is only appropriate. We do this at the end of every transfer window. We got to do winners and losers. This is a big segment here. So let's start off with our winners. Who won the transfer window, David?
Yeah, absolutely. And great stuff. And we'll be covering this extensively on our Patreon page. Enrico Passarella and I are going to be doing grades and taking a deep dive. But let's look at the winners of the transfer window. And I'm still going to name Maldini as maybe the biggest winner in Serie A this summer. And I think a lot of Milan fans, to a certain extent, I think they are right, are very upset that Milan did not get a center back on the last day. There are some who say a center back was a bigger need than Tonali. In my opinion, absolutely would have been good for Milan to have another center back, like better than Gabbia, who can spare Romagnoli and Chiaier. Absolutely. But I think the Chiaier signing was superb. He's played really well this season. Milan's been without Romagnoli. They have yet to give up a goal in Serie A. I know they've had a soft schedule, but Milan has struggled in the past against some soft teams. So I think despite not getting a center back, Maldini is a huge winner this summer. He won the feud with Ragnic at the beginning. Milan decided to stay the course, stay with Maldini and Pioli. The Tonali signing right under Inter's noses was superb. They retained Rebic. They now own him flat out. He was on a two-year deal. They got him early. Now they own him. They bring in Hogg, who they had seen in the Europa League. I think it was smart to bring in players on dry loans just to try to get back to the Champions League. I know Milan fans say, we don't want to develop players for other teams, but it's imperative for Milan to get back to the Champions League. And I think Brahim Diaz and Dalot from Manchester United can help in that regard. We talked about teams struggling to sell, and Milan has been able to shed quite a bit of wages. They sold Welt Suso. Granted, that option to buy was set up with the games vesting before COVID, but Milan really benefited from the sale of Suso. They get rid of Ricardo Rodriguez, who was supposed to come back from PSV. They sell him outright. Reina left as well, another big wages shed there. Bonaventura and Biglia's contract expired. So from where I'm sitting, Milan's in a much better position payroll-wise. They have more talent. They retained Ibrahimovic. The team's done well without Romagnoli and Ibrahimovic. So to me, Maldini is a big, big winner this summer. Definitely poised to become an excellent director. Hopefully Milan will have more revenues for him to spend in the future. After that, I have Atalanta and, you know, great end of the transfer window by selling Traore to Manchester United. I know we're focused more on this particular window, but in 2020, Atalanta have sold Kulusevski and Traore for over 60 million, two players who weren't even on their squad. They've used that money well. They've been refurbishing their stadium. They are investing in the squad. They bring in Romero, who, you know, maybe not a huge upgrade at center back for them, but he fits Gasperini's system really well. They have more depth up front. Lammers, who's looked really good on Sunday, and then they bring in Miranchuk. So they improve their strength already. They are absolutely loaded up front. So great window for Atalanta. To me, just selling a key jewel from your youth system to a club like Manchester United is another feather in their cap. Very intrigued by Napoli this window. Big winners, in my opinion. So they break the bank for Osimhen, their transfer fee record. As part of that deal, they also sell three youth players to Lille, make plusvalenza on that to kind of offset that big transfer. Despite what many had told you that they were spending the Koulibaly money on Osimhen, they keep Koulibaly. And I think they showed really a lot of strength by saying, this is the price we'll sell him at. If you don't need him, we'll just keep him. They don't have an amortized value to protect with Koulibaly. Good for them. They were patient with Lozano, who they got last year. He looked like someone who was going to leave. It's paid off. He almost feels like a new addition himself. And to me, Bakayoko at the end of the window is a great cherry on top. Maybe not a totally necessary signing, but Bakayoko was sensational playing for Gattuso at Milan, is now with Demme, Lobotka, and that mix in the midfield. So very intrigued for Napoli. To me, great window for them. Kudos to them. Now, hopefully, you know, they can play some actual games with all this team. And we'll get to that on Thursday. Then Cagliari, I thought, had a very good window. They bring in Diego Godin, probably the most puzzling, but a cool transfer in Serie A. They bring in highly rated winger Sotil from Fiorentina. They bring in Marin from Ajax. They weren't able to bring back Nainggolan at the end of the window, but I still think very good window for Cagliari. I think the early bird got the worm. I think the clubs that made deals in January for players that would then join later on ended up doing very well. Juve with Kulusevski, I think his value would have gone up based on how he played when Calcio returned. Amrabat to Fiorentina, we've talked about it being a sensational move. Napoli had started their rebuild with Petagna and Ramani, and they're now on the team. And last winner, I'm going to say Inter's present, because you have to be a winner when you make the best addition in Serie A with Hakimi. They ended up retaining both Lautaro and Skriniar during this window in different stages. It looked like they were going to lose at least one of the two, so they keep arguably their two big building blocks for the future on top of Hakimi. In the short term, Vidal looked really good against Lazio. They had him. Kolarov, you know, brings some experience. He'll probably have a moment or two where he'll really help Inter. So I would say Inter's present is definitely a winner.
Okay. Good way to wrap up the winners there for sure. All right, David. Well, unfortunately, who are our losers? Because there have to be some.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's start with Inter's future. We named their present as a winner, but I think in the future, Inter could be big losers. To me, we've said it on the podcast before, if Inter don't win the Scudetto this year, it's going to be a big problem. Conte won't be there much longer, I would say 3 years max. And Inter has sacrificed a lot for the short term. So obviously we know they had Zaniolo, they trade him for in the Nainggolan deal. They had Kulusevski and Tonali and Kumbula all in their hands, and they end up going to other Serie A clubs. So if Inter don't win the Scudetto, I think we are going to look at them really sacrificing a lot for the future and losing out on four players that could be really outstanding in Serie A for years to come. So Inter's future could be a loser. Now, I will say Lazio, it's a little bit unfair to put them as losers, because if you go on the concept of just which teams have improved, I think it's hard to argue that Lazio haven't improved, because they bring back all their starters. And granted, Lucas Lieva is a year older, but they bring everyone back. They clearly improved their depth, Muriqi, Peperina, Farias. But to me, they are losers because they did not get that one signing to kind of change the whole. There's kind of a dark cloud hanging over Lazio, for lack of a better word, seeing how last season ended. And I think they really needed something to kind of change the storyline. And landing either David Silva or Kumbula, who then ends up going to Roma, could have done that, and they didn't. So I do think they improved, but I don't think you'll find many Lazio fans who are happy with this window. And there's definitely reason for concern if you watch Lazio play so far this season. And then I have to put as losers, I liked some of the incoming moves for Juve, but it's kind of outstanding. Juve was not able to sell a single player this window. Let me explain. Pjanic and Arthur was a swap with those inflated values to make the plusvalenza. So if you really wanted to say they did sell Pjanic. Beyond that, it was all loans, and they released Higuain and Matuidi, and Khedira is probably next. So Paratici, who last summer struggled so much to sell, did even worse this year, was not able to sell a single player. So definitely reason from the senior squad, I should add. So definitely issue there. And just with Higuain alone to release him, Juve took an 18 million loss. I think Bosman signings in general aren't maybe as appealing because of the high wages that come with it. Inter was desperate to move Godin to essentially replace that salary slot with Vidal. Godin was making about 6 million net, huge amount. Look, Ramsey and Rabiot was good this year, but Ramsey too has all the injuries. I think in an ideal world, Juve would have liked to shed at least one of those two salaries, but it was really hard. And even Inter had to release Asamoah, another Bosman signing that didn't work out. So I think we're going to start looking at these Bosman signings very differently. And then another loser as a whole is Milik, who as of now is still without, you know, he's at Napoli, still without a team. It sounds like he's just going to wait till January when he can sign for any team. Was linked to Roma. There was some buzz on Fiorentina. But he's essentially going to be frozen out until January. Let's see what happens there. It'll be interesting to see what his market looks like. And in general, as you mentioned it, Alex, this was a very tough market because there was really so little money to spend. I think Serie A teams were pretty creative, did pretty well. But I think the market as a whole, very challenging. And I don't have much hope it's going to get much better anytime soon.
Mm. All right. Well, congrats to the winners, and you'll get them next time, losers. All right, David. So let's get to a little bit of a transfer window roundup, you could say, where we have some questions we'll pose to you. Let's start with this. Other than Calgary, which lower table teams stand out to you during this window?
Yeah, definitely a few. I thought newly promoted team Benevento have done well. They are the club that feels the most like a Serie A one. They did add some players, definitely clear Serie A experience. And Glick, who came back to Serie A after an experience at Monaco. I've always liked Iago Falque, big fan of him. Nice addition to their front line. They bring in Yonita from Cagliari, Caprari, who was at Parma, and La Padula. So Benevento at least look like a Serie A team. I can't really say that for Crotone. In Spezia, I thought Bologna retained all their young talent, and they have quite a few. Tomayasu was linked to Milan. He ends up staying. Their two intriguing midfielders, Schutten and Dominguez, stay. They add another good wing back in Hickey, and they had that fantastic video to introduce him. So I thought Bologna did well. And I'm on a campaign saying that way too many people are down on Verona. I get it. Kumbula, Amrabat were terrific. Ramani, very, you know, above average center back. So those are tough losses. But I think Verona sold them well, made good profits, brought in some good players. Tamese, who had that experience at Atalanta. Benassi, Barak, who's been good for them. Promising Sampdoria midfielder Vieira. And they got Turkish defender Setin from Roma, and Verona are off to a good start to the season. So I like them. Definitely a team to watch. And I'm going to stick by my bold prediction that they finish ahead of Fiorentina.
Okay. All right. It's always good to give some lower table teams some attention. So how about this, David? Which players look like the perfect fits on their new teams?
Yeah, so I definitely like Pereira to Udinese, and he looked great in the match on Sunday. He looks like a great fit. They also bring in De La Fu from Watford at those negotiations with the same owner. So I like those fits, both of them, on that team. Obviously, Smalling back at Roma, that happened at the last second, and Pedro's been really good for Roma. I know we can't expect him to play a ton of games, but he's been a very good fit for them. So Smalling comes back to a team also where he's used to it. Linetti on Torino. I know Torino is going to have a difficult season, but Linetti is a very functional midfielder who already played for Giampaolo at Sampdoria, so I like that fit. Lazio, for the second season in a row, buys a wing back from Spal, who were running a very similar formation. Lazzari was excellent last season. Now, I don't think Fares, who arrived this year, is quite as good as Lazzari, but I think he can definitely be an upgrade over the Lukaku on the left wing that they had, who was always out of shape. I think he can be a pretty good insurance policy on Lulic. And I know Kalinic is not a player that usually gets a lot of praise, but I really like his fit on Verona, because Verona is kind of a defensive-minded team that has a little bit of a nasty streak, and I think Kalinic actually fits quite well on that team. I think he'll remind us a little bit of what he was doing at Fiorentina and what made him into a player that then ultimately ended up going to Milan. So those are my perfect fits on their new team.
Okay, like it. And yeah, Pedro can give you some great goals every once in a while, some really nice ones, and just always workman-like, professional-like performances. You can never view having Pedro as a negative. Just maybe he's not a consistent positive, but he's just good to have. I can never complain about him. All right, David. So last thing here of this transfer window roundup segment, can we expect a gangbuster January window after this subdued summer session?
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. We'll be back at it. January transfer rumors will be starting, what, in about 3 weeks already, if not sooner. No, I have to be honest. I know a lot of people were like, oh, January is going to be so much better. I have to be honest. I think things could get even worse. I think the uncertainty on when fans can get back to the stadiums is going to be a huge, huge problem. It doesn't really seem to be much you know, positive news on that front. So unfortunately, I think we're going to keep seeing more of this, more of these swap deals, more of these loan deals, more of these teams trying to say, hey, you know, we want this money to pay it in 2-3 years. And what happens with that is, you know, even if things do get better, you've already kind of locked yourself up into some expenses that you made years before. So unfortunately, I don't think things will get much better. We would really need a vaccine treatment. Once you start having almost all the fans back in the stadiums consistently, and there's no doubt that that will go away, that's when I think the market will be back to what we're used to. So before we get to our excellent interview with Steve Cerruti for Roma, Let's get to our patrons. Really appreciate their support. We're going to be doing this week, we're going to be doing a lot of analysis on the transfer window, and we'll always have some great Serie A articles. We have a great community there as well, and we answer all their questions. So if you like Calcioland, please consider becoming a patron. We also make a very good monthly donation to a superb nonprofit in Italy called Insuperabili. They run football camps for kids with disabilities in Italy. Really a great initiative. So I'm very happy to welcome our next guest. He's become a very good friend of the show, Steve Cerruti. We often talk to him about Roma. Today we are going to talk a little bit about Moise Kean as well. He's got some fun FIFA tournaments on his excellent podcast, Box to Box Show, which we'll get to at the end of the show. But Steve, it's always wonderful to talk to you. Welcome back to Calcioland. I'm looking forward to chatting Roma with you.
Thanks as always for having me on, David.
Okay, I'll tell you what. Let's start with Smalling. I was going to ask you about Dzeko, and we'll get to him in a second. But we're recording this shortly after the window ended. In typical Italian fashion, there was some suspense, but Smalling is back at Roma. So, A, give me your reaction on how long it took, because it took really right until the very end. So I might say even past the deadline. And how important was it to bring him back to the team?
Yeah, I mean, this saga has been, it almost seems like ever since he had the hot start, you know, to last season, and there were talks about them wanting to make this deal permanent, you know, it seemed like it was almost going to be done last year, and then it drags out into the summer, and then it drags all throughout the summer, and then, you know, obviously we go right up until the deadline. And I'm honestly just happy for Chris Smalling, because he didn't owe Manchester United anything. He clearly wasn't in their plans at all. And I would argue that after what happened last weekend, you can make an argument he's their best center back.
Yeah.
But, you know, he clearly didn't want to be there. They didn't want him there. He wanted to be at Roma. That was the only place that he wanted to be at. And, you know, I think Manchester United, I mean, I don't know if these clubs necessarily owe anything to players sometimes, but I really do kind of believe that just with goodwill, he wanted to be at Roma. That's where he wanted to be. And they were the club that, you know, he was turning down other offers. He made it very clear from the start that's the only place that he wanted. So I'm happy for him, first and foremost, that he gets what he wanted. It seems like his wife, and he really liked the city and liked the club. So it's great. And it's also great because it's nice to see a guy, especially a guy coming from England, who, you know, became so, you know, became a part of the club so quickly, a big part of the club, you know, becoming a captain as well. Just a great overall guy. And so putting all of that aside and my happiness for him, I told you even, I think the last time I was on the pod, David, is that I just kind of don't think it makes a ton of sense financially from Roma's perspective, though. And you know, I'm not upset that he's on the team. I think he'll play a big role this season. But with, you know, they already have three really good, promising young center backs. And I understand the logic of saying, okay, you know, you bring in a veteran, you can sort of, you know, be the, you know, the experience that they need where, you know, where they don't have that otherwise. But I just feel like you could find that in cheaper options. And, you know, paying 15 plus mil with add-ons on top of the 3 million you paid last year for him for the dry loan, it's just a lot for a soon-to-be 31-year-old center back. And especially because he kind of played his best football, David, in a two-man back line, and they're playing a three-man back line seemingly going forward. So I like it from Chris Smalling's perspective. I'm happy for him, but I don't know if it's the best move for the club going forward.
Yeah, no, I think you certainly can make that case. And also, you know, Fonseca seems to really like Smalling, and we'll get to it later in the questions. Who knows how long he'll be there. So yeah. I think it's a good point, but good for him and in the short term, Roma. So you mentioned the three center backs. Let's get to them. We might as well now. They are definitely intriguing for different reasons. We had Mancini, who had arrived from Atalanta. Then we have Ibanez. And then new addition, Kumbula, who started playing recently. So tell me in order, which of these excites you the most, from the most exciting to the least exciting, which I expect is still exciting because they all bring something to the table.
Yeah, honestly, it's pretty wild how well they all complement each other as well. And, you know, three of them very young, not a ton of Serie A experience, I guess. Two of them coming from Atalanta. So kind of an interesting trio there. But If I had to rank them as far as, like, you know, who I think is going to maybe blow up on sort of the world stage here or garner the most interest or, you know, be the best player for them, I would have to start with Ibañez at one. He is still very raw, but, I mean, just the talent that he shows match in and match out, playing sort of in the middle of that three-man defense, being able to bring the ball forward. He's really cool in possession. He is prone to sort of getting himself in a little bit of trouble positioning-wise, but he has the athleticism and speed to sort of make up for that. He has really everything that you would want in a modern defender. Roma fans, I mean, it's funny because the first couple of appearances he made for the club, he did look really good, and it's one of those things where you don't want to get too ahead of yourselves, but he really oozes class and talent, and if they could just hone all of those skills together, I mean, I could imagine he'll, you know, I know some fans would probably not want me to say this, but I could see him going to PSG for big money in a few years. Like, he kind of reminds me of a Marquinhos type player, that type of player again, who's just really exciting on the ball. So I hope they can keep him for a long time. I hope he can develop, but he certainly has the talent to potentially be a world-class player. Number two, I would say Kumbula, only because I don't know as much about him as I do the other two, just, you know, having watched the games last year. But I mean, just in seeing, you know, from you and the rest of the Serie A community, people seem to love him. And in the first two games that he's played, slotting into that sort of left center back spot, he's been really, really good. He's athletic. He's smart and, you know, basically, you know, more intelligent than his age would suggest. So yeah. I think there's a lot to love there as well, too. And I put Mancini last, not because I'm not excited about him. As you said, I'm excited about all of them. But I think he's actually a really important factor to this club because he's the one who's kind of nasty. Like, he has that old school Italian defender mentality that the other two really don't have. And I think you need that a little bit in your back line. It's sort of I'm not comparing him to Chiellini, but he's kind of in that way where he's going to put in a tackle. He might be a little bit reckless here and there. Sometimes that's good, sometimes that's bad. So I would put him third, even though I still do think he is the most classic Italian defender of the three of them. But I do think his ceiling isn't quite as high as the other two.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely fair. And I like that Ibañez comp. I think that's well played there. So let's get to Dzeko. I had him at the top. So let me ask you, not long ago, it seemed almost inevitable he would go to Juve. This isn't the first time that he's kind of flirted with leaving, but he loves it at Rome, never really pushed for it. He's like, if it works out, I'll take it, but I'm glad to stay. Are you glad he stayed, or were you already excited by the idea of having a younger striker in Milik?
This is a really complicated question and answer because I'm happy, you know, I've always been a Dzeko guy. I've always been a Dzeko believer. Yeah. I understand why some of his critics would suggest things like, you know, he wastes a lot of chances. When he's your main striker, everything really needs to go through him. And sometimes that doesn't really help everyone else around him develop in certain ways. But I have always been sort of a pro Dzeko type guy. But David, I have to admit, I really, really believe that Roma are going to regret not selling him for 17 million or whatever the rumor price was to Juve, because, you know, they bought him for, I believe, 13 and a half, 4 years ago, which was an absolute steal at the time. And to be able to sell him for more than you bought him for at age, 34, would have been, I mean, I couldn't even believe if I was Roma, I would have taken that deal at the deadline and forced Juve to sign that and felt incredibly good about it, even without having a striker, even if the Milik deal ultimately wasn't through and fell through. But, you know, I'm not upset that he's still at the club. There are plenty of Roma fans who I think are upset and, you know, wanted sort of there to be a changing of the guards and fresh faces up front. But I do think financially, more than anything, they're just going to regret not selling him, because I can't imagine they're going to get anyone else to give any type of fee for him in the future. And, you know, we saw it against Juve, certainly, and we even saw in their most recent fixture against Udinese, I don't think he's necessarily regressing, but he is just incredibly wasteful, and he should have been able to put that game away against Juve a couple weeks ago and didn't. So he certainly hasn't garnered any, like, you know, more positive will from any of his detractors, but ultimately I think financially is the biggest reason why I'm not super pumped to see him on the Roma squad this year. I was hoping to sort of turn a new leaf and maybe go a little bit younger.
Yeah. I'm with you. At the end of the day, it's not the worst thing to have him, but I think you do make a good point. And I guess both with him and Smalling, you're looking more to the future, which makes perfect sense to me at this time in Roma's history. But they did bring in a Bosman signing, a veteran who's done well so far, and I'm not surprised. I thought he was a nice fit on Roma. And this is Pedro. So what did you make of his start, and how hopeful are you that he can keep this up?
I love him, to be honest with you, David. He's everything that I think Chelsea fans and Barcelona fans sort of said he would be and more. And obviously, you know, he's up there in age as well. But just the consummate pro, he is still – I mean, he still has some great skill. I mean, the only issue that I have with it is I wish he wasn't as big of a – you know, wasn't playing as big of a role as he has been so far. I would like him in sort of spot duty, you know, maybe every other match type of deal. But he's really going to be a prominent member of sort of the three-headed attack there, playing in that sort of winger-slash-attacking midfielder role. And he had a great goal, obviously the winning goal against Udinese. He gets into nice positions. And I think the one thing that, you know, he can bring to this team and with a lot of young players is just, you know, teaching. I think this goes a long way with Roma, right, David? Like, they need to teach some of these young players how to be professionals, how to have a winning mentality, something that they really haven't had for a long time, to get maybe away from that old Roma, mindset of just you know, not being the Juve, not taking it over the top, not killing a team off when you absolutely have to. And this is a guy who's won, obviously, pretty much every major trophy there is to win. So I tell you, I absolutely love him. My only worry is that we're going to rely on him too much, and I don't think at his age he's going to be able to handle that. But for the short term right now, I absolutely love it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I love that signing the second it happened. And plus, those Premier League players seem to always end up doing well at Roma. So let's talk about the midfield. And Diarra, unfortunately, was in the headlines for something that wasn't his fault, not being included on the list. But he's obviously had a very strong season last year. And then we have Pellegrini, who kind of has the golden child from the city of Rome there. If you had to bet in like 5 years or even more long term, who do you think will have had a better career between Diarra and Pellegrini?
Really difficult question to answer. Both bring very different things to the table. I think Pellegrini is ultimately going to get more chances to be that guy, so he's going to be my answer, although I don't know if he's the guy that's ever going to live up to that potential or the hype of being the Roman-born next captain of the team. I like that he's playing a little bit further back now in the formation. He's not playing in one of those attacking midfielder roles. He's playing more of a central midfielder role next to Veretout, and even could play next to Diawara as well. I think that better suits him. Even if his defensive capabilities are lacking a little bit, I still think him being a deep playmaker is ultimately where his best position is, rather than right behind a striker. And I think Diawara, when you look at his game, I think he's just really solid. I mean, other than him being injured and a few weird things coming back from quarantine, like, he, when everything is going right, has been a really, really solid player for Roma. I don't know if his ceiling is quite as high as what Pellegrini's is. I mean, Pellegrini can be a great playmaker. If he adds goals to his game, he can really be a solid player. So that's why I would say Pellegrini. And I ultimately think, I mean, there was even some flirtation with him potentially leaving the club, that being Diawara, because he wasn't, you know, he was happy about sort of being demoted to the bench and Pellegrini taking his spot. So who knows? We'll have to look out for that for sure. But I actually do think that they're going to need all three of them, including Veretout, in that central midfield spot to get to where they want to get to. But if I had to answer your question, David, from potential alone, and because he's from Rome and I think he'll get more chances, I think the answer is Pellegrini.
Okay. I'm going to go Diarra, but I see why you're making your case there. So before I ask you where you think it's realistic and what you would consider a good finish for Roma this season, I have to ask you about the available managers, because, you know, we have new owners in Rome. They didn't hire Fonseca. And look, I think Fonseca is a pretty good manager, but there are some very intriguing managers out there. So I want to ask you, which one kind of piques your interest the most? Spalletti third go around at Roma, or having one of the two former Juve managers out there, Allegri or Sarri? Which of these three intrigues you the most?
Well, I would get rid of Spalletti. As much as I enjoyed parts of the first and the second rendition of the Spalletti eras, I just kind of feel like at this point that would just be ridiculous, and it's just over. All right, everyone just remember the good times and move on, and let's not go back to that situation again. And I'd also like to say, you know, it does bum me out, David, that, you know, I think Fonseca deep down is a good manager. I think he has some good ideas. I think he, unfortunately, because of, you know, circumstances, COVID, whatever, the sale of the club, he hasn't really been able to get the players that he wants into the club and play his type of and play his type of football. I mean, he's changed formations now to something that he wasn't really
used. Yeah.
He usually likes to play the 4-2-3-1. They're now playing the 3-4-2-1, which I actually think was a smart move. They've been better since they've done that, but that's not really who he is. And it does frustrate me because it does seem like the last two managers, he and DeFrancesco, who I don't really love and I don't really rate as a manager, but they haven't really been able to get the players that they want to run and that can make sort of their system work. So this is like a club from the top down issue where I look at it and I go, if you're going to hire a manager, can you please just bring in the style of players that he wants instead of, you know, bring in like random players like Patrick Schick at the last minute or Pastore or all of these guys. So I just want to say, first and foremost, I feel bad for Fonseca. And if he does end up getting the sack and being fired, I don't have any ill will towards him. I think he's a good manager. But I think we are sort of heading in that direction, especially if the season kind of goes where I think some fans think it might go. And if I had to choose between those two final managers you mentioned, Allegri and Sarri, I would be happy with either one, David, but I would choose Sarri, and here's why. I think he would be able to build something similar that he built at Napoli, especially with the ownership. They're going to have sort of funds to bring in players, hopefully bring in some players that he wants. And he'll be given time to sort of grow his project. And honestly, we saw it at Napoli, and, you know, I'm going to ignore the Chelsea and the Juve stuff because I think that was a little bit not his fault. But, you know, he's able to build something at a quote-unquote, you know, club like Napoli and club like Roma. I think they're very similar clubs, and I would be excited by that. I'd be excited by the idea of 2-3 years from now seeing how a Sarri-led club could grow into something that's really special and great to watch. My only reason I would be hesitant on Allegri is because, and I think you've talked about this in the past and plenty of people have as well, is that he's typically done well when he has great players. And I don't know if Roma is going to be able to provide him the type of player and the quality of player to, you know, do what he did at, you know, early at Milan and obviously at Juve. So I would take Sarri just because I think the excitement of Sarri is something that would get the fan base going. And also, you know, let's remember last summer before Roma even hired Fonseca, you know, some would say that Sarri was on their radar and was potentially going to go there before ultimately going to Juve. So I think the fan base would be excited for a guy like Sarri.
Yeah, no, I think Allegri is the most ambitious signing, and that would be a statement from ownership and trying to win like sooner rather than later. But, and also for Sarri, I think it would be a fantastic fit there. Okay, so before, because on top of being a Roma fan, you support Everton. So before you warn your fellow Everton fans of Robin Olsen, who is on his way there, let's do a few over-unders for Roma. It's still early enough in this season that we can do it. Now let's start with the goalkeeper, and it's not Paul Lopez, it's Mirante, who is off to a good start. He already has 2 clean sheets so far this season. So A, you have to bang, you if you go over, you have to assume he'll still be the starter. I said the over under 12.5, so he needs 10 more. Do you think Mirante will stay the starter and get 10 more clean sheets?
I think he will stay the starter, barring, you know, Paul Lopez comes in, gets a chance if there's an injury or maybe in the cup or something to get some playing time and just absolutely wows everyone. But he has not been able to do that so far during his time in the capital. So I do think Mirante will remain the starter. But I think he's done a great job. He really has. I mean, even, you know, a couple years ago when he was in some spot duty, I think he's done a good job. But I would take the under on that, David, only because you can't, I don't think, rely on a 37-year-old goalkeeper to do that for you. Yes, he had a great game against Udinese. You could argue Udinese should have definitely scored at least a goal or two there. And the combination between his age and the back line's age being so much younger, and they're going to sort of be learning on the job here. There's going to be probably some growing pains when it's and I think I'm excited as a fan to watch them. I'm okay this year, David, watching this team go through more growing pains maybe than I have in the past. It's one of the reasons why I didn't necessarily love the Smalling deal financially and the Dzeko deal financially, is because I think this was an opportunity for the team to get younger, maybe grow into something, get your growing pains out of the way so that maybe, you know, middle of this season, next season, they could start growing on this and adding more players to a new potential project. But I think the back line, you know, I think it's going to be tough for them the entire season to get 13 clean sheets total. I mean, they weren't that great defensively last year. It's still sort of a work in progress this year. Smalling may potentially help, but I'm going to take the over on the clean sheets this year, David.
Interesting. I have faith, actually. I really like that back line because I think Roma is going to struggle scoring, which, speaking of which, let's go over a few of their offensive players. And let's start with Mkhitaryan, who I think has been an absolutely great signing and very underrated how Roma essentially retained him on a free, truly free Bosman deal.
Yep.
So last season he had 9, he has yet to score. If I set the over under on him just going slightly over last year and getting to 10, do you think he will?
I do. I think he goes over because he gets into such a dangerous position. Not only does he help everyone around him, he's just really good with the ball at his feet. He's a really intelligent player, and it's something that Roma's really lacked. I think I told you this, you know, last time was that I definitely preferred keeping him over Smalling. I think he was more important. Obviously,
yeah,
you know, they got both, so that's great. But he, to me, is he. They don't have a player like him. I mean, even Pedro's a little bit different, although they are both very intelligent attackers. So for me, I'm going to take the over, and here's why. You know, he's already gotten to so many dangerous positions this year, and his finishing has kind of let him down. I don't think that's going to be the case the entire season, and they're going to really need to rely on guys like he and Pedro to score goals for this team. So out of straight necessity and because of what I've sort of seen in him, you know, getting into really good positions most of the year, I'm going to take the over.
Okay, yeah, I'm big on Mkhitaryan. I'm definitely going over, too. And, yeah, great player for Serie A. And you're right, there's really no one quite like him on the squad for Roma. So we talked about Zeko earlier. You seem a little bit on the fence on if it was good keeping him or not. Last season, he had 16 goals. Yet to get on the score sheet now. If I set it below last season, but still considerable. So 14.5 needs to get 15 to go over. What do you take, over or under?
I think he has to go over if Roma want to achieve any of the, you know, decent goals, yeah, that they've maybe set out for the season. I just don't see it happening. I think it'll be slightly under. I think he'll be around 10, 11, 12. I just don't know what his motivation is, David. I really don't. He just got the contract extension. As you mentioned, he flirted with Juve, was okay with leaving, okay with staying. And the funny thing, too, is I think actually he would have been really good at Juve. I think he's kind of the type of player.
Yeah, I certainly agree.
Yeah, he's a very unselfish player. He would have really helped Ronaldo, Dybala, holding up play, doing all the dirty work, like things that they kind of need in that Juve side. Whereas with Roma, I don't think they necessarily need that as much. And I think sometimes, you know, the offense gets a little bit bogged down with him up front there because they don't necessarily have the quality around him that he would have had at a place like Juve. So just the combination of, I don't know what his motivation is. He looks frustrated on the pitch a lot of the time. And I think this year might be a little bit of a growing situation. And the guy that we're going to talk about in a second, Mayoral, is coming in as well. I don't know what exactly his impact is going to be, but I do think he'll get some decent playing time. So I'm going to actually take the under here, David.
Okay. I'm going over, and I'm with you. I think on Juve would have been a big, big impact. I think he could almost swing the Scudetto race had he gone there.
Yeah.
Last one, you mentioned him, Borja Mayoral, had 8 goals last season for Levante, obviously new to Serie A, had his first training session. I set a low over under at 5.5. So do you think he gets to at least 6?
Another really difficult one. I mean, you're good at this, David. I got to give you credit for that. You really make it.
Yeah, I put a lot of thought into these.
I this is a tough one. I'm going to take the under on this as well, only because I'm excited. I actually really like the signing. I think he offers a lot of different things in attack. He has some similar characteristics to Dzeko in that he's a bigger guy, hold up play is decent. But he really hasn't been a prolific goal scorer, you know, at least the last 2 years in Spain, and obviously wasn't able to really work his way into the setup at Real Madrid. Although a lot of people, if you talk to the, you know, around the Real Madrid, around the club, do really like him and think he has a future, at least as a decent striker. But I don't know what kind of playing time he's going to get. I mean, last year, obviously, Roma had Kalinic and as sort of a vice Dzeko, and he was certainly not up to par for what they needed. So Dzeko ended up playing a lot. I don't know if Mayoral is going to be able to work his way into getting consistent time starts and all of what that takes to get to 6 goals on the season. Plus, just looking at his past record, I mean, 8 goals last season is not a lot, David. It's really not. So I'm optimistic that he will be good and will get some decent run out there and be like maybe the potential striker of the future. But I think logically I have to take the under because he's such an unknown.
Okay, so Steve, just going by the fact that you think Miranda is going to go under clean sheets, Zeko and Mayoral will not hit their goals. I have a feeling you're not that optimistic for the season. But tell me, what do you think is realistic, and what do you think a very good season for Roma and the standings would look like?
I think a home run season, David, is finishing top four. I think if they finish fourth, I think
it'd be kind of a miracle seeing Serie A, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I would. I mean, I'd give Fonseca a raise if somehow he finished top four. It's not that I don't like what the direction is going. I mean, obviously, I'm excited, like most fans are, about the new ownership and potentially getting a new sporting director, which they need to do desperately, as we've seen by some of the deals fall through the deadline here. But I do like some of the young players they brought in. Obviously, the back line is really exciting to me, even though I don't know if it'll be, you know, what we want it to be right away, which is why that's part of my pessimism. And, you know, you've basically got this really young defense and this really old, aging attack. Some of the players that I mentioned, I still do really like a lot. And, you know, I think you can make an argument that Veretout right now might be their best player. And that's a good thing, because I think he's sort of the engine in the middle, and he's going to have a huge season if they want to get to where they want to go. But I think a home run, absolute great season is if they finish top four and somehow make Champions League. I still think that they're going to finish, you know, around six or seven and be in the Europa League mix, but I don't think they have what it takes to compete with Atalanta, certainly with Juve, certainly with Inter, even Napoli. I think that for me, that would be my top four, not in any order, but that would be my top four. I mean, I got to throw the Lazio dig in there. I think they're going to take a step back. I just think they will naturally. And I'm still not ready to buy in on Milan just yet. Like, let's have them actually win anything anytime soon before we like anoint them a top four team. And they're so reliant on a guy like Ibrahimovic. So I think they'll be in that mix with those three clubs. And I think they'll probably finish somewhere around six or seven, which again, isn't the end of the world, David. I'm actually truly excited for the first time in probably, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years to not have high expectations for this team and just be able to watch them and enjoy some of the young players and watch some of the development, because I think there are some really exciting young players to watch on this team.
Yeah, no, just getting ready for this podcast and asking you the questions, I was like, Roma is kind of better than I thought, but Serie A is just so strong at the top that now we have to almost give Atalanta a given Champions League spot. And you're right, Napoli to me are very impressive. I agree with your top four. Okay, before we talk about your excellent box-to-box show, I have to ask you about Everton. So right at the deadline, Roma sends Robin Olsen over there. So please, I doubt he'll play much, but preview what they can expect there with him should he have to play.
You know, with the way Jordan Pickford has been playing, I wouldn't make anything off the table, David. I mean, he made a terrible mistake against Brighton over the weekend, and this has just been, ever since sort of the first game of the season when he has a clean sheet against Spurs, everyone wondered if Pickford sort of turned the corner. Turns out he has not. The problem is he's honestly like a Kepa Light situation. He's on such high wages that no team is going to touch him, so they're kind of stuck with him. As bad as Robin Olsen was for Roma, he was that good, you know, obviously on the loan spell at Cagliari. So I guess there maybe is some optimism there for Everton fans. And, you know, if it's just a dry loan, I think, you know, there is a decent keeper in there. I mean, I think the problem was when he arrived at Roma, it was like, okay, you're replacing Alisson, who to me is the best goalkeeper in the world. It was almost a no-win situation. So as bad as he was, I'm still sort of optimistic that maybe he can sort of turn it around and be a solid keeper for Everton. And I mean, here's the thing. Everton, at this point, I mean, they've got a really great attack. The team looks really good. They're the only undefeated or team that's won all of their games so far in the Premier League. All kind of the goalkeeper has to do is not screw up and make mistakes. You don't have to make unbelievable saves. Just kind of do your job and try not to stand out. And Robin also had trouble doing that at Roma, but I think there is a decent keeper in there, and at least just some competition for Jordan Pickford. I could see why this makes sense.
Yeah, and you're right. At Cagliari, he certainly was much better. So from Everton, we were maybe expecting Moise Kean to head back to Juve. He doesn't. He goes to PSG. Tell me, I have a feeling you do not expect them to be playing a game again in an Everton jersey, or do you think there's a redemption story potentially for him?
No, I think we've probably seen the last of Moise Kean in an Everton kit, which is, it's unfortunate because I do think there is a good player in there, and I think the fee had a lot to do with it, going to a league like the Premier League, which is, you know, probably more physical and maybe a little bit harder to adapt for, you know, a guy who's still a teenager. Like, I think there were so much expectations on him. They were so high for him to come in and be Everton striker of the future. And then all of a sudden, Dominic Calvert-Lewin sort of just takes off and looks like an absolute world beater right now. So, you know, he's just not going to get a lot of game time there. And, you know, Everton's backup striker is another really solid attacker in Richarlison. So I guess when Ancelotti comes in there, you look, okay, Italian manager, you know, he wanted him at Napoli, that being Kane. So maybe there's some optimism there that they could sort of turn this thing around. But he just, whenever he goes onto the pitch there for Everton, David, he looks lost. He doesn't look like he's sort of enjoying himself out there. I'm not one of those guys that like to judge body language and attitude, because I think that's going to be overblown sometimes, especially with, you know, a guy who's clearly like trying but struggling a little bit. I don't think that means it's like a massive red flag. But I think a change of scenery is probably going to do him good. And oddly enough, I think he probably is going to be able to play and get more playing time at PSG than he would at Everton, which is wild to say. But in 2020 is the year of everything weird. So I guess maybe that's the case. But, you know, I do think behind a guy like, you know, Mbappe and Icardi, like they do need kind of a striker like him. So he'll probably play, and they're obviously in a lot of competition. So I think Everton's main goal probably here is to maybe get a transfer value back up, and they'll probably sell him off somewhere next summer.
Absolutely. Okay, Steve, before I let you go, tell our listeners a little bit about your excellent box-to-box show. You guys, I really enjoy chatting with Steve. I thought he was awesome today, as he was every other time we've had him on. More than keeps up with our great guests from Italy. So, Steve, great job. Always so much fun chatting. So tell our listeners what they can expect on Box to Box Show.
I appreciate that, David. So, you know, Box to Box Show, like, we are mostly we talk about all the leagues, but mostly Premier League, a little bit of MLS, domestic soccer, U.S. soccer, Champions League as well, just news and notes. But one of the things that we're trying to do is grow a sort of global FIFA community. We want to set up tournaments for mostly Xbox, but we're also going to probably dive into PlayStation 4 and then 5 and then the new Xbox as well when it comes out too. Setting up FIFA tournaments. We had a Club World Cup tournament that was really awesome. 32 different teams all playing online. We have a bracket that we do. We have a Discord community that you can get involved in. So we've done a Club World Cup. We've done a regular World Cup. We've even done a draft where we're drafting individual players and you're building them into your own squad. So we've done that at FIFA 20, and we're just kind of trying to carry it over to FIFA 21. So if you're interested in joining any of our tournaments, they're free to join. They're just because we enjoy playing FIFA and like the community, and we've actually grown to like a lot of the guys and get to know a lot of the guys that are involved, and it's a really great group of people. So if you want to get involved, you want to get in a tournament for FIFA 21, make sure you check out at Box to Box Show on Twitter. Shoot us a tweet, and we'll put you on a list for an upcoming tournament.
Yeah, I strongly recommend it. And Steve, I can't thank you enough. Great time tonight chatting culture with you. I look forward to doing it again during the season.
Anytime, David. Always a pleasure.